Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, the 26th of December, 2017. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Harbor staff, the owner, and neighbors helped put out another boat fire in Petersburg Saturday morning, this time in Petersburg's North Harbor. A 27-foot fishing vessel, Carol II, caught fire just before 9:30 Saturday morning. Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department sent one truck with a crew to respond. Dave Berg is spokesman for the department.
It was knocked down pretty well by the owner of the boat and other fishermen that were in the area. Fortunately, it could have been really big. It looks as though, well, it's still under investigation. It looks as though that the cause was an oil stove that had flared up, and you know how it does in cold weather. You turn that carburetor on, and the stove warms up, and suddenly it starts to flow more and more. And if it's unattended, it can cause and catch. It can get too hot and catch other things on fire. And in this case, there were some combustibles that were placed very close to the stove. And they caught on fire, caused quite a blaze. Fortunately, not too much damage because it was caught early in it, but it scorched the house pretty good.
That's the fourth boat fire in Petersburg Harbors since late October. The state's Board of Fish next month will be considering action plans to restore king salmon returns on rivers in southeast Alaska. Those plans could mean reduced time or closed seasons for commercial, sport, and subsistence fisheries throughout the region. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has recommended that three rivers in the region, the Chilkat near Haines, the king salmon on Admiralty Island south of Juneau, and the Yunuk north of Ketchikan, be added to the state's list of stocks of management concern. Deputy Director of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Division of Commercial Fisheries, Forrest Bowers, says the first management measures to follow are restrictions to fishing areas.
So we would look at the distribution of that stock as it's migrating through the various fishing districts, and we might restrict fishing time in areas where that particular stock is known to be in high abundance at certain times.
Stocks have to fall below the department's goals for salmon returning to the rivers to spawn over multiple years before getting the recommendation for a stock of concern status. Other major rivers, the Taku near Juneau and the Stikine near Wrangell, as well as the Setuk near Yakutat, are not recommended for the designation. However, the department expects conservative management measures for those king salmon as well. Forecasts for next year on five of those six rivers are the lowest on record. Bowers says stocks in southeast have been shrinking since the mid-1990s, but he says Fish and Game continued to meet its escapement goals until just a few years ago.
That tells me that harvest has not been a major driver in the decline, because we haven't really changed our harvest policies in that time period. Something else is going on, and we think it's related to survival in marine waters.
He says possible factors could be food availability, predation, or warming waters. It will ultimately be up to the Board of Fish to decide on action plans for restoring king salmon runs. That board meets in Sitka in January. There are draft action plans written by Fish and Game available on our website, kfsk.org, along with this story. And the deadline to comment on those plans is 5 p.m. Thursday, December 28th. A hydroelectric plant for a small southeast Alaska community is a step closer to reality. Governor Bill Walker included funding for Cake's Gunnick Creek project in his capital budget proposal. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has details.
Cake is a village on Kuprinoff Island, around 100 miles southeast of Juneau. It gets its power from diesel generators, which makes it expensive. Officials have been looking for alternatives for years. The most likely option at this point is a small hydroelectric project using water from nearby Gunnick Creek.
It is shovel-ready.
Jody Mitchell is CEO and general manager of the Inside Passage Electric Cooperative. It also runs systems in Hoonah, Angoon, Klukwan, and the Chilkat Valley. Mitchell says Gunnick Creek, if built, will be the third such project for its communities. Two more are on the list.
We have an opportunity with these hydro projects to fix a problem and completely get ourselves off diesel.
Gunnock Creek is ready to be built, but it's been stalled for several years. Now, it's included in the governor's spending plan for the next budget year. The nearly $4 million isn't enough to complete all the work, but it's a solid start. Mitchell hopes to get additional funding through a federal grant. She says the cooperative could also borrow the remaining $3 million. Cake is represented in the state Senate by Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican. He supports construction, but sees some issues.
My concern with this project is that we build, for instance, Gunnock Creek, but it's on a postage stamp rate amongst other communities, and I'm not sure how much the other communities, including Cake, are going to see their utility rate impacted.
The rate is based on the average of costs for all of the electric cooperative's customers. That means Cake will only see some of the benefits of cheaper electricity. But Mitchell says customers there will still pay lower bills.
I believe now that the economics of that, even if we were to borrow the money, would still result in a small rate reduction for our consumers, our member owners.
For years, officials hoped Cake's needs would be met by a new 60-mile power line to Petersburg. That would connect to a regional grid linked to two large hydro projects. The line and an accompanying road have been studied intensely, and it has some of the permits it needs, but it's been shelved because the tens of millions of dollars it would cost isn't there. The power line project recently lost a $2 million grant from the Alaska Energy Authority, and some on the hydro agency that held that grant hoped the money could be spent on Gunnock Creek or another project in the region. Energy Authority spokeswoman Katie Conway says that's not how it works.
The Gunnock Creek project is not connected at all to the Cake-Petersburg intertie. It is unique. The project was high enough on the list through the solicitation process and the project and the application vetting process required in order for projects to get funding.
Gunnock Creek will use a dam built last decade to provide water to Cake. The structure was also designed to be used for a hydro project. Mitchell says it needs a 2,100-foot penstock or large pipe to carry water down to the generators. She says they'll provide more than half of Cake's electricity. The rest will come from its diesel power plant, which was recently upgraded to be more efficient. The penstock will also provide water for the local hatchery that was purchased last spring by a regional aquaculture association based in Sitka. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
Attorneys this month made oral arguments in a Petersburg civil suit challenging sealed search warrants under Alaska court rules. The plaintiffs want to see the state institute some process for the target of a law enforcement investigation to regain property seized as evidence and in a reasonable period of time. Here's more in this report. Two men, former Petersburg resident Danny Thompson and current resident Greg Richeson, are suing the borough, a local police officer, and the Regional Drug Task Force, Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs, or CCAD. The Alaska State Troopers are also named in the suit for their involvement with that task force. The two men say in separate investigations in 2013, Petersburg police officers obtained search warrants and seized property from their homes. The borough's attorney, Timothy Bowman, argued that there's been no constitutional violation. He said property belonging to Thompson has been returned, but he acknowledged that law enforcement still held some belongings from Richeson. Superior Court Judge William Carey questioned Bowman on that point.
Let me ask you, I mean, how long does investigation take? Now, there's no statutory limitation, but my God, you know, it has been kind of a long period of time.
Your Honor, I understand that. I think that everybody realizes that it has been a long time, and I think the issue has to do, well, most of all, the investigation obviously started out as one for a marijuana grow operation.
The oral arguments were held in the Petersburg courtroom with most of the participants on the phone from other locations. Bowman said the investigation of Richeson has been taken over by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and valid search warrants have allowed law enforcement to look at Richeson's phone and electronics.
I think we all probably can surmise that it's gone beyond just a marijuana grow or a controlled substances investigation.
Bowman thought lawsuits like this can be used to undermine a valid criminal investigation, and he noted it is now out of the borough's hands. Carey came back to his questioning and said in practicing criminal law for over 3 decades in the state, he'd never seen an investigation take this long. Here's Bowman responding.
Again, there's some interest in sort of keeping maintaining some confidentiality to some of the proceedings. But I think ultimately what you're going to find is that it's a reflection of, to some extent, the resources that are available to a small town police force in southeast Alaska.
The plaintiffs are not challenging law enforcement's use of the search warrants. However, the suit challenges the procedure under the state's court rules that allows those warrants to remain sealed for 4 years in cases that do not result in criminal charges. Plaintiff's attorney Fred Trium argues that seizure of property for years is a violation of the protection against unreasonable search and seizure prohibited in the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, along with a similar provision in the state constitution.
The police and the CCAT people take the plaintiff's stuff, but they do not return it within a reasonable time.
Trium argued that includes Thompson, Richeson, and others in Petersburg, and he's hoping the case will be expanded into a class action to allow other plaintiffs. These men say the police seized coins, guns, computers, electronics, cameras, cell phones, personal papers, jewelry, and other private property and did not return the items for a while. Thompson's belongings have been returned, but he argued that he was still injured by the loss of his property during that time, and Richeson is still waiting for the return of his possessions. Judge Carey questioned Trium on the issue of a reasonable amount of time.
So what's reasonable to keep a cell phone?
I think it should be measured in days, simply because the entire contents of a cell phone can be copied eo instante, instantly.
And again, the judge kept up with that line of questioning.
So are you asking the court to set a reasonable period of a few days?
I'm asking the court to recognize first and foremost that the current scheme of indefinite seizures is unreasonable and therefore it violates the Fourth Amendment. Once we get past that point, there should be some mechanism for the aggrieved party, the target, to complain or to request the return of the stuff.
Prosecutors opted not to bring charges against Thompson, but could still against Richeson. Assistant Attorney General Mariana Carpinetti is representing state law enforcement. She argued that the suit asked the judge to set a reasonable time for returning the property without specifying what that meant.
It leaves law enforcement agencies in a position of saying, you might be violating the Fourth Amendment by conducting a criminal investigation, but you don't know when you're violating the Fourth Amendment. You don't know if, you know, you're going to be responsible if another agency, a federal agency, steps in and takes over an investigation. You don't know if you're going to be responsible if the district attorney's office is totally overwhelmed with cases and is not screening cases as quickly as they should be, and takes a long time to screen out a case.
Carpinetti argued that the 2.5 years that Thompson's money and other property was held was not unreasonable and said the state had little involvement in the other investigation. Judge Carey pressed the plaintiff's attorney, Trium, on the state's involvement in the lawsuit.
CCAD is still alive with, it's in alliance with, the local police who are trained by the state agency.
That alliance is enough to impute liability.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Attorneys for both the plaintiffs and defendants have filed motions seeking summary judgment in the case or decisions in their favor, which would avoid a trial. The judge also has to rule on whether the case can be expanded into a class action. Meanwhile, a trial in the case is scheduled for the week of February 20th. In other news from around the state, high winds ripped through villages on the Kuskokwim Bay coast in southwest Alaska, knocking out power lines, upending outbuildings, and damaging rooftops. KYUK reports winds reaching 85 miles an hour that struck Quinnagak on Friday morning, killing power in about half that town for a day. Quinnagak resident Mike Smith says he saw plywood flying around, cars sliding off the road, and a partially constructed home ripped off its foundation. Fuel pumps also damaged in that town, and gas and stove oil were being rationed. The electrical cooperative there says power was restored in that community Saturday night. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vignicki. Coming up on KFSK, we have Street Beat Music with Ross Nanook III this afternoon, then the High Country with Laura Lee Mason at 2:30, All Things Considered at 4 o'clock with local news and updated weather at 4:30, and Alaska News Nightly on at 6 o'clock tonight, followed by Ebb Tide Music with Deacon Blue at 6:30, Thistle and Shamrock at 9 o'clock, and at 10 o'clock, Radio Free Petersburg with Tony Vinson. Coming up next, weather and messages.
Support for KFSK comes from The Salty Pantry. Open at 6:30 a.m., serving breakfast and baked goods, and serving lunch, including soups, sandwiches, and hot dishes. The Salty Pantry at 14 Harbor Way near Middle Harbor in downtown Petersburg. 772-COOK or facebook.com/thesaltypantry.
27 degrees outside the KFSK studios at the moment. It has warmed up a little bit, but it's forecast to get a lot colder in the next day here. Today, cloudy skies, a slight chance of snow showers, highs in the 20s with light winds. Mostly clear tonight, lows around 10 this evening with winds light. Mostly clear tomorrow, highs around 20. And light winds, mostly clear again tomorrow night, lows again around 10 and light winds. Partly cloudy Thursday, highs in the 20s, light winds, chance of snow Thursday night, lows around 20. And for Friday into Friday night, chance of snow, highs 25 to 30, lows around 20. Chance of snow for Saturday into Saturday night, highs around 30, lows in the 20s. And again, chance of snow Sunday, highs around 30. For Sunday night into New Year's Day, snow likely, lows around 30, highs in the mid-30s. In the marine forecast, a strong high pressure will build over the Yukon today, increasing a northerly outflow. A front will move north into the southern Gulf by tomorrow night. Inside waters, Stevens Passage, small craft advisory through late tonight. North winds today 15 knots, becoming northeast 30 knots this afternoon. Seas 3 feet, building to 6 feet. Tonight, northeast 30-knot winds gusting to 50 out of interior passes, seas 6 feet. For tomorrow into tomorrow night, winds out of the north 20 knots, seas at 4 feet. Southern Chatham Strait light winds today becoming north 10 knots by this afternoon, seas 2 feet or less. Near ocean entrances, seas 5 feet. For tonight into tomorrow, north winds 15 knots and 3-foot seas. And tomorrow night, north winds 20 knots, seas at 4 feet. Frederick Sound light winds today becoming northeast 15 knots, seas 2 feet or less, then 3 feet. For tonight, northeast 20-knot winds and 4-foot seas. For tomorrow into tomorrow night, northeast 15-knot winds up to 20 knots by tomorrow night. Out of interior passes gusting to 35 knots tomorrow morning. And for seas, 3 feet tomorrow up to 4 feet by tomorrow night. For Sumner Strait, light winds becoming east 10 knots this afternoon, seas 2 feet or less. For tonight, northeast 10-knot winds, seas 3 feet. Tomorrow, northeast 20-knot winds out of interior passes gusting to 40, seas at 4 feet. And tomorrow night, east winds 20 knots gusting to 35 out of interior passes, seas at 4 feet. In Clarence Strait, light winds today, seas 2 feet or less. For tonight, north winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet or less. Tomorrow, north winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. And northeast winds tomorrow night at 15 knots, seas at 3 feet.
Support for KFSK comes from Diamante Gift Shop, featuring beautiful hand-painted Alaska-made ornaments and new additions to the Metal Arts Jewelry Collection at Diamante Gift Shop in downtown Petersburg and at facebook.com/DiamanteGifts.
Happy birthday on the 26th of December to Ralph Peterson and Butch Whitethorn. Happy birthday. Congratulations goes out to the winners of the Petersburg Chamber of Commerce Christmas Decorating Contest. In the single family category, Andy and Katie Yeckley at Philbin Street. In the boat category, Jim Roberts. In the businesses, there was a tie, Petersburg Pilot and Lee's Clothing. In the neighborhood category, Dolphin Street. And also honorable mentions go out to Kurt Kernvick, as well as Mike and Cindy Moyer. And the Chamber of Commerce thanks the judges, who wish to remain anonymous. Recent fire incidents in the harbors in the past few months prompts the Harbor Department to remind all boaters to check their boats on a regular basis. If you're using oil stoves or electric heaters as heat sources during the cold snap this winter, monitor stoves for soot buildup and oil flow into the stoves. Also check electrical cords, connections, and outlets for overheating. And that's from the Harbor Department. Reminder, Jones winter workout schedule on hold for this week, restarting again next week. The Moose Lodge is hosting Taco Tuesdays for members and their guests tonight from 5:30 to 7:30, serving corn and flour tortillas with Spanish rice and all the fixings. Youth Night at the Lighthouse Assembly of God for junior high and high schoolers is Tuesday night, 6:15 to 8:15. Also, there's a high school only time, 8:15 to 9 p.m. Midcoff Island Alcoholics Anonymous tonight has a 12x12 meeting at 7 p.m. at the Lutheran Church Sunday School classroom. More information at 518-0061. Also, Tuesday night's mean an acoustic jam session, 7:30 at 106 Joa Street. Contact Joseph at 650-7228 or stop by to make it happen. Tomorrow is the deadline to file for a recall on vehicle airbags that may be defective. To see if your vehicle is included in the recall, go online to airbagrecall.com and enter your vehicle identification number. Petersburg Housing Coalition meets Thursday, December 28th, 7 p.m. at the Petersburg Public Library. The Project Homeless Connect point-in-time count on January 23rd will be the focus of that meeting. There will be an election of the Petersburg Indian Association Board of Directors January 8th. Polling is open at the location at the AMB ANS Hall, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on the 8th. There are 3 2-year terms up for election and board chair, a 1-year term. Also 3 2-year terms for Johnson O'Malley Parent Committee. Nominations are due by this Friday, the 29th at 3:30. Written candidates must file a letter by January 2nd. Write-in candidates, that I should say, must file a letter by January 2nd. And more information with Debbie at the PIA at 772-3636 or email piaelection@piatribal.org. Women of the Moose are hosting a prime rib dinner for New Year's Eve at the Moose Lodge, serving only 30 for dinner from 5 to 7. Reservations at 772-4616. That's a look ahead for the next few days. Coming up next, we have Fish Radio, and we'll be back with Street Beat Music with Ross Nanook III.
Midday Magazine on KFSK is sponsored by Rockies Marine, selling Yamaha 4-stroke outboards from a 2.5-horsepower portable to the F350 V8, all rated for ultra-low emissions, including the 4.2-liter V6 225, 250, and 300-horsepower models. Yamaha's full 4-stroke lineup, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and Saturday, 9 to 1, on the web at rockiesmarine.com, 772-3949, or toll-free at 800-478-3949.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. How many fishing boats are in Alaska, and where do most fishermen live? I'll tell you more after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at AMC.org.
Alaska's fishing fleet of 9,400 vessels would span nearly 71 miles if lined up from bow to stern. And Alaska's fishing industry catches and processes enough seafood each year to feed every person on the planet one serving, or servings for every American for more than a month. Those are just a few of the fish facts highlighted in the annual Economic Value of Alaska's Seafood Industry